All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought so. And get this, Nair, yes, Nair, the OG that I used for years, has now leveled up. And they have these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell amazing. My personal favorite, coconut oil and vitamin E because it's gentle on my skin. And down to that body cream scent, baby, rich cocoa butter and vitamin E. A modern take on indulgent and classic femininity. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If ADD and ADHD was as big in the 80s and 90s as it is now, both me and my brother would have been on medication.
I can see that. Dead ass. And you know, as we are thick into the virtual learning realm with children, parents and children, I wonder if parents know what to look for in their children behaviorally that will now impact their learning.
Dead ass.
Hey, I'm Kadeen.
And I'm DeVal.
And we're the Ellises.
You may know us from posting funny videos with our boys.
And reading each other publicly as a form of therapy.
Wait, I make you need therapy?
Most days.
Wow.
Oh, and one more important thing to mention, we're married.
Yes, sir, we are. We created this podcast to open dialogue about some of life's most taboo topics.
Things most folks don't want to talk about.
Through the lens of a millennial married couple. Deadass is a term that we say every day. So when we say deadass, we're actually saying facts. 100. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. We about to take pillow talk to a whole new level.
Deadass starts right now.
So this karaoke song means a lot to me, of course, because y'all know DeVal love the kids.
I love the kids. I love them too,
and this
man.
Was an anthem at Prototype when we were doing Prototype.
It
this
was
an anthem.
I know what song it is.
Shout out to New York. I ain't gonna shout out the artist yet till we after.
Okay. All right. See, I was very fitting. I wore my New York.
I see you.
New York forever.
You.
It don't matter where I'm at.
You look nice.
I'm at. It's New York forever. me. All right now.
Ba-da-ding.
Hey. Bismarck D. I love it. I know I can be what I want to be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. I know I can be what I wanna be. If I work hard at it, I'll be where I wanna be. Hey. I love it. Alright, did I? We can cut.
It's my song.
Yo, let me tell you, this season you've been hitting all sorts of notes and octaves. I think somebody's been practicing for karaoke.
We've been in quarantine.
It wasn't me, though.
We've been in quarantine for a long time.
So you've been practicing your singing in quarantine?
Yes, I have. You heard that?
I've been practicing my baking. 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 Yeah.
You've been baking.
For sure. Not sure as hell I'm baking. All right. Bismarck D.
Yes, Bismarck D. That's my new nickname, baby.
Shout out to Tribble. Tribble. I still can't get Tribble's name right.
No, you
Anywho.
Can't. Yes.
Story time.
All right. So this story time is going to take me back
to. Tell me a story.
2014.
Okay.
I'll never forget. I'm not going to say the young man's name because y'all probably go find him on Facebook because people are crazy. But his mom, my brother and I were doing prototype in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And his mom brought him to us because he wanted to be on the football team.
Okay, that narrows it down to about 400 kids.
Yes.
Don't go looking them up.
And I'm not going to say the school. Uh-huh. But she brought him to us. Mm-hmm. And she said his issue is he has behavioral issues, so he's been medicated. He has about a 63 average. She just wants him to graduate high school. That's what she
That's
said.
That's her aim.
Her aim was, listen, okay. He's off the rails. I just need him to graduate high school. And my brother and I have been used to dealing with children like this because he was 14 at the time. And we were like, let's try something different. You know, we're not going to do the whole screaming thing and get upset at him. And so let's try to give him accountability first and tell him, listen, if your average does not come up to a 75 after this first semester with us, you can no longer participate in prototype. So a lot of times what we notice is if you give accountability to kids and they're around other kids who exist in that same accountability realm, they'll normally just step up without you having
to
be super disciplinary.
Because nobody wants to be
They don't want to be the dumb kid.
Right, or the butt of the joke.
The butt of the joke. So pretty much since you know you had to have at least an 85, no one wanted to be the dumb kid at prototype. Mm-hmm. So he worked to get his grades up, right? And then we asked him seriously, like, what's the matter? He said, man, when I take this medication, I just don't feel good. When I'm in school, I'm tired and I feel sluggish. So me and my brother was like talking to his mom and said, can he stop taking the medication for a semester and see how it goes? His grades went up to an 88.
After
taking him off the medication. Mm-hmm. And he started a workout program with us, and we gave him words of affirmation to say whenever he felt nervous. Mm. So remember we used to say, I'm big, I'm strong, I'm fast, I'm elite,
I'm a prototype. Yep.
That started with this young man because he didn't have confidence. So like if you get nervous before tests, meditate, go to yourself. I'm big, I'm strong, I'm fast, I'm elite. And then we spoke words of positivity. You can do this, like you've already done this. Mm. This young man ended up graduating from high school with an 88 average, attending college, and now has his bachelor's degree.
Medication free.
Yeah. And his mom just wanted him to graduate. She wanted him to pass. And here this young man was able to go on and do well and excel and go to school. She said never in a million years did she think her son would go to college.
Wow.
And he went on his own merit, earned an academic scholarship. So that's my story. I'm proud. I'm not going to say his name. The people who know me probably know this young man because they know who I'm talking about, but I'm not going to blast them about what his grades were before prototype. But
it's not how you start.
I'm
it's
proud
how you
of
finish.
Him. That's true. That's true.
You know
I'm
what I
proud
mean?
Of him.
It is how you finish.
And he's not the only one.
All right. So the new normal, though I really do not want to accept this as like the new normal.
Then don't accept it.
It's the new temporary. How about that? It's the new interim. Okay, if you will.
Okay.
But whatever this is, has really changed the way our children are experiencing education.
Yes.
But today we're talking about how virtual learning affects children with learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to gain some insight on how to best support our kids through this transition, because like I said, now parents have assumed the role of teachers and everywhere else in between when it comes to the educational staff. And normally in those environments, in school environments, teachers can then pick up on a learning disability that a child may have or some sort of behavioral
issue.
So now that parents are home with their children, you know, how do you really hone in on realizing what those things are? How do we differentiate what just may be frustration from the parent and maybe frustration from the child who just may not even understand, or the parent may not understand how to navigate such a deficit? So we decided to bring in an expert today because we don't know nothing about that side of things. We just know our own three kids and we're still learning them. We are still learning them on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
So allow me to introduce our special guest today, Dr. Rima Naeem. Rima attended the University of Southern California, where she completed her bachelor's, master's, and doctorate.
Dang, you was there a long time.
She was there a long time. In psychology and occupational therapy, her love for animation and creative nature gave birth to the Senso Kids, four lovable sensory characters whose role is to educate clients and families about occupational therapy and the sensory systems we work with. Dr. Yes. Naeem received her SIPT, that Sensory Integration and Praxis Test Certification, shortly after opening OT Studios, Inc. and becoming a CAS, which is a Certified Autism Specialist, to expand her knowledge and passion for working with sensory integration. She currently oversees the business and is working on expanding the Senso Kids brand. She is also a fairly new mama as
yes,
well.
Yes, yes, yes. Clap it up, clap it
to
up.
To a beautiful little boy, Xavier. Yes. Thank you for joining us today,
Rima. Thank
you
so much for
having
me.
So happy to have you here.
Thank you, thank you.
And it's amazing that we have you here on the day that your book launched.
I know, it's crazy. It actually happened. I've been working on this for 5 years now, wow. So it's pretty amazing. Since I opened the clinic, which is 5 years ago. So
that's
this is a
up.
Huge accomplishment on my end.
No, for sure. And what I love is that in speaking with you, Rima, just having past conversations, mm-hmm. you talked about how much you were able to or desiring to somehow find a way to use your creativity mm-hmm. when it came to your practicals, you know, profession. Mm-hmm. And I'm super happy for you. I'm super excited that you were able to navigate this and find a way to integrate your creativity and your love for that right. into your field of work.
Absolutely. I mean, I initially as a child wanted to be a music video director.
Oh, yeah.
That was my
okay.
dream.
You would have been recruiting me then. Because I used
yeah,
to be
know
a video victim.
I used to drop, it.
Know,
Kay
right?
used to drop in the music video.
I was super
and I
into
still do. Just for my husband. Okay.
No, I was super into like filmmaking and in music and just the ability to express myself creatively. Mm-hmm. But in my culture and my background, my family was all, you have to be a doctor or a lawyer, that industry is too difficult to maneuver through.
Yeah.
And I went into occupational therapy, got my doctorate, and then the creative bug did not want to leave me. The creative
never,
bug was like,
never does.
It's going to come out some way, and it came out in my profession, which is something I'm so excited about and proud of.
That's amazing.
Well, I'm excited about it. And
yeah.
I read The Sensory Kids. And one thing that kind of interests me was learning about two new senses. My whole life.
Girl.
I was taught about there being five senses.
I was today years old when I found out that we had seven senses and not five.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I felt
mm-hmm.
I feel like now I'm doing my children a disservice. I need to take this book home with me so that I can introduce the other two to
no,
my
seriously.
Children.
No, seriously. Can you pretty much break down the seven senses or the two
additional
senses?
The so
two additional.
The five that we all know of, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We all know the five senses.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two additional senses, and they are the vestibular system and the proprioceptive system. The vestibular system being the movement and balance system. So
mm-hmm.
basically, let's say if you close your eyes and you move your head right, left, back, forward, you know the direction you're moving
right.
based upon your vestibular sense, which is located
right.
in the inner ear. Or if you're on a roller coaster and you close your eyes, you know which direction
you know
you're going.
Going.
That's
right.
your vestibular sense.
Okay.
Then you have the proprioceptive sense, which is basically muscle activity. So if I do jumping jacks, the joint receptors are sending connections to my brain that this is what your body is doing in this action, right? Understanding the importance of those two will help when it comes to child development, because if you think about the playground and children trying to navigate new the jungle gym
mm-hmm.
or new activities within the playground setting, some children who are having a hard time processing these sensory this sensory input are having an issue with praxis, which is basically the neurological connection or neurological display of a connection between the cognition and the action.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So your cognition and your action kind of connectively through the brain. So them having an issue with that is a sensory concern, but a lot of times it will look like the kid is antisocial. They don't want to play in the playground.
So it surfaces as a behavioral issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, oh, she's sitting on the corner because she doesn't want to play with anyone. She doesn't like to engage. No, she may have an issue with praxis. She may have a motor planning issue.
Right.
Her senses may be affected. So let's get a sensory evaluation done by an occupational therapist before labeling a behavior or an issue that may not be that. I mean, I'm not saying it isn't a behavior issue,
well,
but I'm saying there's something
see.
else. that you should consider it being.
Right. So it's not just automatically labeling the child. It's like, okay, do we do our due diligence as a parent to say, you know what, let's have our child see an occupational therapist. So for someone who may not know what exactly an occupational therapist does, can you let them know what you do?
Absolutely. So as an OT, I'm in pediatrics. OTs are in many different facets and areas, but I am in pediatrics. And what we do is we basically work with children who have autism, developmental delay, sensory processing disorder, children who are not meeting certain milestones. And we do evaluations on them. We see exactly what areas are limiting, gross motor, fine motor, social, emotional, where it is. And then we create treatment plans and goals around those areas. And that's what we do. We work with them on achieving those goals in the long run.
So this was crazy, right? Because I saw an occupational therapist after my surgery, and most people do when you're a professional athlete. All these motor skills, proprioception, vestibular, I've heard these terms before. After you come back from an injury, you have to retrain your body to be able to do these things. So, for example, I remember when I came off my surgery and I broke my finger. In the very beginning, I had an issue catching the ball, not because I didn't know how to catch a ball, but it was working on the motor skill from my finger being ready to catch. So we had to do a bunch of, like, you know, therapy things for me to get that back. So it makes it makes me think how many kids probably struggle with those things from young, and we just pass that off as, oh, this kid is just, something's wrong with them, without working on it. We're only ready to work on it as adults when we see it fits for something like athletics. But this is important for everyday interaction.
Absolutely. I feel like pediatric OT and just OT in general, and I feel like an understanding of sensory integration and an understanding of how it can impact or be affect your child's development is important for all parents and all teachers and anyone who's really interacting with a child on a day-to-day basis, because understanding that information will help you pinpoint certain things you may have not thought of and probably not label things as, oh, this is definitely a behavioral, or this has got to be this or that. No, maybe this is sensory related, because a lot of things can be sensory related. There's a thin line with the behavior and the sensory, and just understanding.
So I feel like part of what an occupational therapist does is investigative. So it's finding out what it is. And then you're corrective, because if you can correct certain things on an earlier phase for the child, then it will not impede the progress of their growth and hitting those milestones later on.
Yes, if a child comes to us with tactile defensiveness when they're maybe 3 or 4, it's easier for us to work with that, or younger, preferably. But if it's later on in development, it's a lot harder.
Tactile defensiveness is what?
Defensiveness too. So basically, if you are wearing something that is itchy or bothersome, for you and me, it might be, okay, this is just bothersome. I can handle it, though. I can still live my daily life.
Right.
But for someone who has tactile defensiveness, it would be a real bothering
problem,
and it will actually impact their daily life.
So if they can't articulate that to their parents, they may come across as a behavioral issue in school if they're wearing
a turtleneck that's
bothering them. And you know how many times we've seen this?
I think I've even seen this in Jackson. I used to get those fleeces that you zip up here, and he's like, I hate the zipper on my neck. And I'm like, dude, it's just a zipper. Like, and I'm saying that as an adult. But
no, but as long as it's not impacting his daily life, as long as he's, I mean, I hate certain textures too, but I can still function. Now, if you can't function, then there's a level that you need to see someone who can actually work with you. And in OT, as an OT, when we work with these things, we work basically with the neurological system in the clinic, all under the guise of play. So the child doesn't realize that what we're doing has a neurological basis.
Right.
The child is thinking, I'm playing.
Right. I have a play date today with Dr.
Rima. I have a play date. But what I'm doing really is, you know, navigating these neurological sensory concerns.
And I'll say why that's important, especially from a young age. We got a lot of parents in Prototype whose children, whether it was a boy or a girl, who brought their children to Prototype because they felt like they were antisocial. And they were like, they need to work out because they're so antisocial, they don't want to go outside. And since they don't want to go outside and they're antisocial, their parents are worried that they won't be good people. You know, like they're just being a part of a team.
Assimilating with people, being able to interact.
And bringing them to Prototype, we worked on these drills, just taught them how to be sports. And as they became more confident doing these drills because they did it over and over again, when they got back to their block or their community, they felt more comfortable going outside to play basketball because their balance was better. They were a little bit stronger. They were faster. And then they started to develop friends, because we all develop our society. Well, as society, we all develop our friends through play.
Totally.
So when you make a kid feel more comfortable with their body, they'll feel more comfortable speaking to another child. And I've seen it firsthand with Prototype.
Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it just firsthand in playground settings. And I've just been
That must just be a great like specimen area.
The playground
for you,
is the best playground. Place. Yeah, you can see all kinds of things in the playground. But yeah, it makes you think. And then a lot of the teachers will identify, oh, this kid doesn't want to. Or for example, on the circle time, if a child is sitting at circle time and he's rolling around on the carpet and not paying attention, the teachers will sometimes think he's got a behavior problem. Right. No, maybe it's his vestibular system, his balance and movement sense that may need, you know, maybe he's having a hard time processing that that feedback and that sensory information. So if he's inadequately processing it, then it's unfair to be labeling him as having a behavior issue. Right. So get him an OT referral. Let's figure out what this is.
What this is.
But not knowing about these other two senses.
Yeah. Right.
You don't know.
You don't know
about
what you're
these,
looking for.
Exactly.
And you worry. As a parent, you just worry.
So are there any tools that parents can use, I guess, prior to getting to an OT doctor? Are there any tools that parents can use to help identify a child with some sort of sensory issue or deficit, particularly the two that we are referring to that many people don't know about?
Right. So in terms of that, I would think a lot of it is, for the younger kids, it would be understanding the milestones, right? Understanding your child's level of meeting certain social milestones. If you're catching it in an early phase, it's make sure that they're reaching their developmental milestones. Later on, I would suggest getting an evaluation, just because we have specific standardized evaluations, the sensory profile, the sensory processing measure, and then we also have the sensory integration and praxis test, which will identify. So the tool, I would say, in identifying the tools, it would most likely be a standardized assessment, getting that done if you see certain characteristics in your child, like the ones we were talking about.
Dope.
This is funny how we, even as an adult, you characterize someone as being socially awkward, and you notice that they're physically awkward as well. And you never think that they may be socially awkward because they've always been physically awkward. So they've always separated themselves from people, and now they're socially awkward because they were always physically awkward. But I have a question. How are parents, because parents are struggling with this, if for the past year almost, when it hasn't been a year, it'll be a year.
Feels like
March,
a year, though.
It feels the longest
feels
year ever.
Longer.
But when you have children who cannot go to the classroom setting.
Right.
So there is no carpet time, rug time.
There's no interaction with children anymore.
Yeah. Children are literally sitting at the computer and then coming to talk to their parents. How can parents begin to look for these signs at home? Because you don't want to spend a whole year. We don't know how long we're going to be like this.
Absolutely.
And so many milestones can be hit within a year. Depending on the child's age range. I mean, most of them we look for, I would say, is it safe to say, are when they're younger, like in a couple months and
I would
and
definitely
years,
look for everything the earlier the better.
Right.
I know the CDC has a checklist that you can download for free that kind of gives you an idea of what milestones your child should be meeting at certain points. So following those milestones, making sure you're with your pediatrician. Your pediatrician is also looking at this stuff too.
Right.
So communicating any concerns to your pediatrician. But as for virtual learning, yes, it's definitely a cause. It's definitely a concerning thing when you have a child who may have sensory concerns and they're in home with the inability to do much. So movement breaks are huge, being able to take movement breaks.
Yes.
Understanding that they may need to do the proprioceptive jumping jacks and get a little bit of vestibular, you know, movement going.
So the importance of recess.
Recess, yes.
Necessary.
Absolutely important. There are things like fidget toys that are huge.
I just said about the fidget spinners.
Yes.
Not only that, but chewing, I don't know if you were one of these people, but chewing on your pencil, a lot of the kids have these little chewy things that you can chew on instead of the pencil. Proprioception, that's your jaw muscle activity, kind of giving you some sort of ability to maintain a little more attention, a little focus. Even the sense of taste, like eating things like sour candy or something that alerts you. You know what I mean? Little things like that to just
Stimulate
and awaken. Yeah.
Now, this is important because Jackson is the one kid who will always be like, I need something. I got to eat something. And he's always, and it makes you wonder.
I thought it was just him being a growing boy. So I'm like, he's going to eat me out of house and home soon.
Do you ever watch him when he's on his computer?
Yeah.
Whenever he's on his computer, he's always doing something else while sitting on the computer.
Yeah.
He's always, he has his phone, and sometimes I'm like, put your phone down. Mm-hmm. Then he'll put his phone down, then he'll have his pencil, he's like twirling his pencil, and I'm just like, bro, what is wrong with you? Like, sit still. But that's when I had to check myself and say, maybe I shouldn't tell him to sit still. Mm-hmm. I should find something for him to do.
Maybe that's helping modulate his sensory arousal level so that it's at optimal level of arousal where he's able to maintain the focus and attention needed. And I think that's great that he's found. Now, if there was if he was unable, if it was impeding his chances of focusing entirely and he was not getting anything done, then I would say, okay, this is a cause for concern. But if he's finding ways to modulate his arousal level and get himself to focus, then that's actually not something to judge, but to encourage, okay, if that helps you, if sitting on a wiggly chair helps you, okay, let's do it.
You know what's funny? You mentioned the wiggly chair.
You're about to say it.
I'm about to say it. Jackson, we've set up his room, a space in his room where that's his workstation for school, you know, because we wanted to mimic the classroom. So I literally got him a desk and I got him this like swivel chair, you know, it's blue and it goes up and down and it swivels, right? So at random points, During the day, we'll be downstairs in the kitchen or whatever. He's in his room concentrating. And then we'll hear like a boom or like a crash.
Ka-dum-dum-dum.
And we're just like, what the hell is going on up there? I'm like, it's not gym class. I don't know what he's doing. He's like falling out of the chair or he's spinning or he's just doing something. The chair is broken now, Rima.
Oh, no.
The whole back of the chair has fallen
off.
The screws are everywhere.
He's been like.
And he's just, you know, and now that you mention it, I'm like, that's Jackson.
But this is the crazy thing. Academically, he's through the roof. Mm-hmm. And athletically, he excels athletically.
But
if he were in a class setting and kept moving, you know what they'd say?
Yeah.
He has a behavioral issue and, you know, he needs to go see someone about it because he won't sit still. That was my brother, Brian. Mm-hmm. And I got in trouble for the same thing. DeVal won't be quiet. He won't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry that he's going to get to a point where they're like, well, he needs medication. Because I worked with a ton of middle school kids for the past 10 years, and there's always a point when they get to about seventh grade where we see young black boys in particular where it's like, oh, he needs medication, he has ADD or ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
And their parents will bring him to us at Prototype and be like, well, before we do this, can you guys work with him and see what it is?
Mm-hmm.
So we give them a workout regimen for them to do at home and for them to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we've noticed that their behavior calms down when they work out.
Right.
So can you talk a little bit about how movement just helps?
Yeah, absolutely. Proprioception is like the main modulator of everything, right? Like we always consider it like when everything fails, use prop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically muscle activity, which is what you're saying. Muscle activity, whether it's pushing something heavy, whether it's, you know, doing any climbing activities, things that really incorporate muscle strength and muscle activity is a modulator. So if a person is super high aroused and unable to pay attention or low arousal and needs a little push, it's always a good idea to incorporate prop. And that is something you see as well from an athletics perspective.
I feel like DeVal is like the poster child for that. Because if this guy is not pushing a weight or lifting, you know, a barbell, he cannot focus.
No, seriously.
It's like he literally has to be moving
every
in
day.
Order to be calm.
I'm at your house every day with your husband. Every day I have to lift weights. If I don't lift weights, think about how productive I've been since I started lifting weights every day going to Slick's house. Think about how much we've gotten done. Lifting weights for me has been like the, because even before we started going to lift weights, I was running. But I didn't have anything heavy in my house. So I felt restless.
Right.
Once I'm done lifting weights in the morning, I'm
fine. After that, you can lift me, boo.
Yeah.
I got a whole
weight. You got weights on you.
Right. Don't.
look.
You said that with a little bit too much conviction and passion for my life.
It's the type of weight I like, baby.
It's quarantine weight.
It's the type of weight I
Just
like.
Just let's be clear.
I'm not complaining about that wagon you're dragging. No.
It's dragging, for sure. I need to get some squats in so we can stand up. So, Rima, for new parents, because we have many people who follow that are around the millennial age range, either have children, thinking of having children, For new parents, at what age should they start to look for the signs during this developmental process that may or may not be an issue for their children? And second part, it's a two-part question. Should parents look for different signs between boys and girls?
Yeah, that's a huge question.
I mean, that for that, I would say there are studies that say, you know, boys develop gross motor skills faster and girls develop fine motor skills faster. Or boys are less communication. Gross motor and fine motor. So fine motor, like writing or doing anything.
Girls
with,
are better at that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So studies have shown this. I feel like all children develop on their own trajectory. And I do believe that there is, you know, some truth to that. But at the same time, I wouldn't say that would be the thing to think about. I think it would be really looking at milestones when it comes to autism specifically, which people with children with sensory processing issue a lot of times have. I mean,
autism?
They do go kind of, you know, there are sensory processing disorders on their own, but then there's also autism-linked sensory processing disorders. And then to just look for the communication, like, do they pay attention? Do they look at you in the eyes? Do they pay focus and eye attention? Giggles, laughs. Are they socially kind of communicating with you? Are they waving bye-bye? Are they clapping when they do something good?
This is as young as 7 months, 8 months.
I believe so. Yeah, like around eight months and above, 9 months and above.
Even tracing, like the baby looking back and forth, that's something that happens at a couple months.
Pointing to things. It's their nonverbal social communication skills. So you should definitely be looking for that. But I know that the pediatricians do the MCHAT, I believe, which is a series of questions around 18 months, I want to think. I'm not a pediatrician, so I don't know. But around that time, they'll do the MCHAT, and that's also a big one in terms of an assessment. But yeah, if you see any concerns, if you see anything that you find is a little bit strange or odd, I would always go to the pediatrician and ask for, you know, for advice on how to proceed. And if it is a sensory issue, then I would always say, you know, approach an OT.
So if a child is suspected to have autism, for example, it would be an assessment from an OT at first? Typically what happens?
It would be from the pediatrician first.
Okay.
A pediatrician would screen it.
Okay.
And then they would go on to refer you, whether it's to a developmental pediatrician or whoever else that they would, but we would get the referral after that. So the developmental pediatrician or the pediatrician would refer.
I know that it's been heavily debated where autism or any of these behavioral issues or you know, problems maybe arise. And I know that there's probably certain risk factors that maybe start as early as when a woman is pregnant or not.
I thought you was going to ask about the vaccines, because now
that's part of it. You know, that's a big hot button
topic
now.
I know you're an OT, but I don't know if that's...
The MMR vaccine, I mean, there's no real justification. I mean, I know people feel strongly about vaccines, but...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Some people are really either on board about it or
so
not.
So what do you think?
I don't believe that there's a strong link. Based on research, I don't believe that there's a strong link to the MMR vaccine. But I do understand the concerns, and I do understand.
Absolutely.
Every parent's concern is warranted. Mm-hmm. Everybody's concern.
That's the concern for the COVID vaccine now, because we don't want to be the first to try it. And if you have young kids that have to go back to school, I'm not going to just let you stick my kid with a needle and we don't know what the long-term effects are.
Right.
So there's no, like, bulletproof, clear-cut, like, reason or explanation as to how autism appears.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, concerning.
It's,
kind
of it's concerning. And I feel like if there was a way that we can combat this, you do it.
Yeah.
And we'd be doing it as early as maybe when you're pregnant, because you can relate to this now as a mom, I'm sure, Rima, in that you try to do everything perfect while you're pregnant. Like, you follow all the rules.
Yeah.
Don't eat this. Yeah. Do that. Yes. Take your prenatal. Yeah. Do that. And then you just ultimately pray for a healthy baby that will grow to be an amazing person. And you just never know some of the factors that may, you know, impede the progress or slow things down. So,
Well, do you think that autism was something that always existed, but now we just have ways to diagnose it? So it's become a little bit more of a hot button topic now?
I believe that we've definitely improved the ability to diagnose it. Yeah.
Right.
And the ability to find out that, okay, this child definitely is showing symptoms. We didn't have that before, you know. So yes, I definitely think it contributes for sure. But that's a good thing, because then now you have an earlier chance of finding what we need to work on and how
and
we can
be productive.
How we can get in there from a young age.
I feel like we may know some people who now in our adult life was just like, oh, such and such was just kind of socially awkward growing up. Right. But then as an adult, you'd be like, wait, maybe he might have, you know, been autistic and we just right. didn't right. know.
And there is a spectrum. So there is a spectrum. Know, right. So high functioning sure. versus low.
Yeah.
Because I know
yeah.
some high functioning people now who I think may have been autistic, but some people just crazy. You know? Sometimes I look at my wife. Sometimes I look at my wife and I'm just like,
you know,
she may be on the spectrum. That decision she made, you really needed to buy all them shoes?
No.
You needed to buy, that was a poor decision.
That's the way I deal with. What sense is that, Remo?
The monetary.
It's probably like a fifth sense, eighth sense that I don't know exists that I definitely have.
That's C-E-N-T-S. That's the sense. You'd be spending a lot of sense and making no sense.
That's yes. So the American Association of School Administrators conducted a survey of more than 500 superintendents across the country in June. Mm. When asked what they struggled to provide as schools switched to distance learning, the number one response was special education systems.
This so is huge.
That's huge because yeah. you think about parents who not only have to work and try to provide a life for these children, but then don't even know how to adequately
Special for special needs.
Yeah, yeah. particularly Absolutely. Special needs. How are they working with their children now with limited resources? So 83% of superintendents said that they were finding it hard to do. So where many people may have had, you know, a place to bring their child who was special needs or had maybe an right. attendant that came in, mm-hmm. now they don't have
they
anything.
They don't have that because schools provided that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I guess my question is, how far of a setback is this for children? You figure it's only been a couple months, like we said, feels like a year. But how do you see an impact in how this is going to affect children long term, having had the situation that we're in for the past few months?
Absolutely.
And I is some like... of that going to be corrective later? Or like I almost feel like this generation of children who are school age are set back so far.
Right. No, I feel like a lot of our kids, even because of COVID, were afraid to come back into the clinic, and they were mm-hmm. you know, struggling with some serious, you know, sensory concerns. And seeing them now as they're more likely to come back into the clinic, it's you obviously will feel, you see a complete digression.
Yeah,
yeah, like now we have to kind of, you know, work harder. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is, I would suggest if your child is in OT or has been in OT to get them back in OT as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. I know for us, we've taken huge measures of being very safe with the following the CDC guidelines and making right. sure everything's sanitized, but and I know most clinics that I know of are as well. So getting back into the sessions is most helpful because yeah, just leaving it to, you know, watching all of that progress, all of a sudden start to decline.
Yeah. It's a whole setback.
You know what I would tell parents, and we do this with our boys, and we were doing this before distance learning started. We always incorporate physical activity, but also arts and craft. Because mm-hmm. we have our youngest son, Kaz, and Kaz is very different than mm-hmm. the other boys. Mm-hmm. But Kaz loves to feel. Mm-hmm. Like, he loves to play in the dirt.
He
loves
likes
sand.
Yeah.
He loves water.
Yeah.
So we feel like we always wanted to make that part of his routine. Because when he's able to do those things, he then feels better afterwards, you know.
Yeah.
So we try to make sure that arts and craft is always an important part. Play-Doh.
He loves
Play-Doh.
He loves Play-Doh. I have to watch him so he doesn't eat it. However, he likes to experiment with it.
He's eating everything.
But it's amazing because parents with multiple children, you have to now evaluate each child. And that's why we talk about how important it is to make sure that you're engaging with each child on a certain level so that way you know what to look for whenever
Absolutely.
You...
And each child is a unique case, especially when it comes to OT. You know, there's not one answer for all. It's very much specific to the child and the child's specific needs from a sensory perspective.
For sure.
So that's why the evaluation from an OT is always the most important part, because then you'll get the specific response for that child or the specific treatment.
Right.
Well, I also know that every family can't afford an OT. So are there certain things that a family, like if you can give some advice to a family that has children who are middle school, elementary, that you feel like, listen, this child may have a case.
Yeah, where are the resources that they can find?
What are the resources or what could they do at home to help?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the virtual stuff and when it comes to focus and attention, I would say just prioritize getting all of those little sensory gadgets. Mm-hmm. Whatever your child may be seeking, whatever sensory output they're experiencing or they're needing, just facilitate that. Okay, if you can't sit still, let's do exactly what you guys were pretty much doing. Yeah. You know, let's facilitate what we can to make sure our child is able to focus and pay attention. But no, ultimately, if you're below the age of three, the regional center services are free.
Okay.
So
that's good to know. A lot of people don't know that.
Regional center. So if you contact your nearest regional center and say, I think my child is having these concerns, could you please evaluate? They should be able to guide you in the right directions. And then also from that point on into the school district as well. Mm. I mean,
I know black people fear getting their children evaluated because they fear the label.
Yeah,
you know, the label is tough for black people.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the parents we dealt with didn't want to get their kid either. But talk about how important it is to get their children evaluated.
Even if so. And a lot of the times it's not even a label that you'll get. A lot of the times it's more so, okay, there's some sensory concerns here that we can work with. And, you know, we work with it. But it's more detrimental for the child if they have autism or they have something that needs to be labeled and they don't get it to them until later, then they've really done a disservice to their child. So I would suggest, and a lot of the times it's also not, you know, it's not autism. It's possibly a sensory processing concern or something that we can work with in the clinic that's not, you know, so stigmatized.
Right.
But it's
doing more of the stigma around the label. It's almost like someone going to seek therapy, you know?
Right.
Just something as simple as that. There's a stigma around therapy. It's like, oh, you're not right in your head if you have to go speak to someone about the way you're feeling.
Especially in the black community.
For sure.
That needs to change because if you don't get the help, you're doing the bigger disservice to your loved ones, to yourself, to your children. The disservice is coming on in a higher level than just living with it and acting like everything is perfectly fine. And it'll catch up to you
especially,
in the end.
Yeah, especially when you know that a lot of this can be corrected.
I know. So if you wait until 15 to get a diagnosis, well, we could have done so much more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's the point in... I understand the stigma and I understand the reasons behind being scared, but I encourage parents... to do the right thing by their child and get the necessary diagnosis if needed, but evaluation.
I would encourage the same thing because the stigma comes from a lack of trust that black people have for healthcare professionals, specifically if they don't look like them.
Right.
So a lot of the black moms and dads that we had come through our prototype was like, I'll take him to go see someone, but they got to be black because, you know, if you don't understand black culture, if you don't understand black people, when you look at things, through a lens that everything they do is wrong.
Right.
Anyway.
Or almost feeling like you want someone who can relate to your particular struggles or traumas that you may have had to endure. Same thing with a midwife. When I was seeking a midwife, I was like, let me find the blickety blackest one that I could find because I'm like, she's going to understand that black women are dying, you know, during childbirth.
Right.
You know, black babies are dying at a way faster rate than our white counterparts.
Right.
So I think that's super important. And I mean, do you see diversity in your field?
I do. Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of incredible African-American OTs that we have, a lot of doctors of OT, a lot of people doing amazing things in the field.
So we got no excuses, people.
No, we got no excuses.
No excuses.
Definitely.
A friend of mine found out that her son was autistic very early on, and I applaud her because she has been super involved and invested in making sure he has every resource available. They're based in New York, so she said that she was just surprised at how many, you know, available resources were literally at her fingertip.
Sure. Yeah, when you research.
She posted her son's schedule, like on a weekly schedule, and he had this therapy, that person, this person. You know, literally every person was in a time slot to ensure that he was getting the total package and help that he needed. And I really applauded her, and I was happy that she was letting people know because, like we said, with the stigma, she could have been like, well, I'm not going to show my baby as much because he is autistic.
Right.
Instead, she's empowering people to speak up about it, and inspiring people to say, you know what, get your child checked out if you see something is not, you know, normal.
Absolutely. And many times it is a collaborative effort. You know, it is the OT, the PT, the speech speech language pathologist. It is a whole bunch of people working together to help this child you know, live the best life possible and as independently as possible.
Yeah.
And you see a huge difference from kids we've seen. We've had children that have been with us since a few months old, now, you know, a few years old. And you see a huge, huge significant growth and difference if parents are consistent with going to therapy, showing up, making the effort, doing what they need to do. If a parent is inconsistent, you will also see the change. You'll see that in the therapy results.
Mm-hmm. Is that frustrating for you an OT? Like if you see a child who has the potential to be so much farther along.
So frustrating. Yeah. It's so frustrating. So many times we do see kids who need the therapy so desperately, and parents are like, oh, well, you know, I've got this. I think they misunderstand OT because they don't understand that through the guise of play, there's a lot going on.
Right.
And in their mind, it's like, okay, they're just playing, I don't know. So with this book, I kind of wanted to shed light on the fact that, yes, we are doing play-like activities, but if you understand the senses, if you understand through a story-like perspective, you know, what could be happening with your child and how you could be fixing it and how we are actually working on these things in the clinic, then maybe you'll give it a little bit more of an understanding of, okay, I need to put emphasis. A lot of the times they'll be like, oh, speech is more important, speech is more important. It's like, absolutely, speech is important, but there's a huge component here in OT that you're missing.
Right.
And you see it in the child. You see the child not reaching the max potential in that.
Is there a link between sensory issues and or the approach that you take as an OT and like the Montessori method? Because I know that Montessori learning method is a lot of play-based.
Play-based.
For us at first, I was kind of like, they play all day? Like, what does that mean? Yeah. I think you could play at home. Like, why am I paying you $1,500 a month to play? Then we kind of like bought into the sauce at one point with Cairo for a little bit. He wasn't feeling that particular school in particular, but I know that there's some amazing people who have sent their children to Montessori schools for years they saw amazing amazing results with their children. So is there a direct link, you think, between like the sensory Montessori method?
Yeah, I mean, there is, I'm sure, sensory perspectives in the Montessori method, Montessori being the educational component and sensory processing being more of a, know, a medically driven product. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, I'm sure they incorporate. I went to Montessori as a child myself, and they do incorporate a lot of sensory activities into it. And there is a kind of link, but they're still two separate components.
Well, we grew up in the exact opposite of Montessori. We were in school where you had to sit your ass down.
We did.
If you were fidgeting, you would get hit with a ruler.
Yeah.
Which now I'm starting to think about how many behavioral issues there were in Bethlehem.
We were abused.
There were a lot of kids.
Oh my goodness.
You know better now, you do better.
Yeah, but corporal punishment was a thing in the school. Mm-hmm. Devon and I went to the same elementary school. He stayed for a couple years. I stayed throughout the entire elementary and like junior high school phase of life.
And the people who were able to thrive in there were super successful. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of people who left Bethlehem. And now that I think about it, you never gave them a chance to work through their sensory issues if they had.
Yeah.
You
considered it was the actual opposite.
It was. Wow. Do not move. If you move, you get popped with a ruler.
Yeah, right. Children that say moved or pop. Spoke out of turn or anything, there was like a consequence for that. And I will couple that by saying that there was a lot of love in that school too.
Absolutely.
As hard as it may seem, there was a lot of love in that school as well, and a genuine care for the child. But I also, we spoke about generational traumas and like how we came to pass down these ways of child rearing that they deemed necessary at the time when years ago. Like, you know, you got to keep a black child in line by like beating them and making sure that they know there's consequences for their action. So I never want to say that we were in a very hostile environment at that time. But
we're both as successful as we are because of Bethlehem Baptist Academy.
Yeah.
Right.
But I do also understand that there are certain things that I allow Jackson to do because I've learned better that my mom would have never allowed me to do. For example, my mother would have got me a chair that does not turn, does not swivel, the back cannot move. I would not have any toys.
No devices.
No devices, no phones. But Jackson gets to sit at his laptop with his device, with his toys, in a chair that moves because it allows him to find a way to focus. That was the exact opposite. I would have been in a all-white room with one chair and a notebook. And just had to work like that.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like it's so important to provide the education and the awareness.
Absolutely.
Because then other parents will also start to see things the way you do. And other teachers will start to see things the way you do and start to understand, okay, there's more to this.
Right.
and there's better ways that we can handle this for the development of the child.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely important now, especially with so much distant learning. But Rima, you don't have to run, right? Because we have to do listener letters. But before we do listener letters, we have to take a quick break.
Okay.
So you go, cool,
no,
right?
I'm cool. Yay, that's okay, good. Cool. We'd love to get an expert perspective on yes, when people write in. So okay, yeah, we'll come back after we pay some bills.
Pay some bills, because y'all seen Kay likes to spend all these cents.
It's all about spends all these cents. So. Deval thinks that I lack common sense, but I really don't. I just like spending sense. As long as it's a deal, though.
Gotta, so let me go pay these bills so I can just pay for whatever it is that she just described just now. We'll be back.
We'll be right
listen
back.
Listen to letters.
During the break, let's quickly talk about a couple things that are important to most people I know. Comfort and style. Crocs, classic clogs, and sandals have both covered.
When I'm talking about style, I mean personal style. There are just so many colors and so many Jibbitz charms that you can add to the Crocs to make them unique. You can dress up your Crocs to match your mood, to match your personality, to fit the occasion, and you can change them up day to day.
I mean, ultimately, you can stand out from the crowd in a way that only you can because it's your personal style. And now, let's talk about comfort. You know, it doesn't get better than Crocs, clogs, and sandals when it comes to being comfortable. Style and comfort are usually a trade-off, but here, they're a package deal. It's like you have cushions on your feet. Soft, stylish, personalized, colorful cushions.
That's right. So why wait? Head over to Crocs.com today and experience the comfort and style of Crocs classic clogs and sandals for yourself. Your feet will thank you.
Hey, what's good, y'all? I think it's important for you to understand why Black representation in media is important. It's important because the media represents how people view us, and it's important that they understand that Black people are not a monolithic people.
That is a fact, and the next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truth.
Black Stories, Black Truth is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths.
Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story.
In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience.
Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Y'all, let me tell you, after the Love Against the World tour, my social battery is depleted, drained, no energy. How do you feel, babe?
I don't know. You know, it can be easy for people to ignore their social battery and spread themselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up one after another in the wintertime.
That's a fact. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge after that? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time like me.
You know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deadass today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/deadass.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
All right, we back. I went and paid mad bills. I went and stripped too, so I can help, you know, cover whatever the lack is. I gotta make ends meet. All right.
Clearly, so, you did something strange for a little change.
I had to, the way you spend money, but We are back now. We got listening letters. Like I said before, we have Rima Naeem with us. Doctor.
Doctor. You keep leaving off the doctor. Yeah. My good sister's been in school for mad years.
Anybody who go to school for 9 years deserves to be called doctor.
Absolutely.
Because I did 4 and it felt like, woo. Woo.
All right.
So we are back with Dr. Rima Naeem, and we're going to answer these listener letters. We have one today. I'm going to start reading out loud. I am a married mom. Not me. She is. With 2 sons and a daughter, ages 7 through 12, even when school was operating normally, advocating for our children could be very difficult. Mm-hmm. Now with virtual learning, what tips would you have for parents on how to best advocate for your child and ensure that their needs are being met? Rima, you know, Rima loves to advocate for X, and X is only 8 months.
Especially, she better be his best advocate. I would hope so.
Especially when they are a creative, active child that learn best through creative and in-person interaction. How do we advocate for these children during this time?
I mean, I would suggest contacting and reaching out to the schools. I know that it's difficult. I know it's hard, but reaching out to them and just advocating for, you know, any kind of aid or any kind of help that you can get within the home system. I do know of some parents who have been able to get help.
Mm-hmm.
Is this locally? Is this from California? Is this like California?
She doesn't say exactly where we are, but if they are in California, then.
Yeah, I believe that there are ways to go around it. I know it's difficult. I know the school district and everything is a really hard process. I can totally sympathize with that. But I would suggest continuing to advocate as much as you can and trying to reach out and trying to get, you know, as much, you know, as many resources as you can to get an aid or to get some kind of help within the home system.
Yeah,
to help.
I agree. You know what I would do? I already know what Kay would do because it wouldn't even be me. She would be on it. But Kay is not afraid of moving our children, especially with remote learning. You can remote learn with any school and any curriculum. Mm-hmm. So if that curriculum does not fit with your child, hey, you know what? I may have to remove my child from this situation and try to find a remote learning curriculum that works with helps them moving forward. Yeah, I would do.
Because, you know, as much as I don't like to be, it has a negative connotation, helicopter parent or like being over your child. For me, it's not about being a helicopter mom. It's about being involved. Like, there's a difference, you know what I mean? And knowing what I'm looking for with my child. Us moms, dads, we know our children best.
Right. Yes.
So absolutely. If you see that there's a deficit or you know that something may impede their progress, I'm the queen of pivoting and just pulling them from whatever it needs to, and then finding the resources.
Yep.
So one thing I know is what I don't know. Mm-hmm. So if I don't know something, I'm the first to try to find resources or asking, you know, friends, asking an expert, asking a friend who may know somebody who knows somebody and getting a referral that way.
Right, absolutely.
And I mean, there's levels to needs that children have that need to be met. For us, the simplest thing so far, just to even get that in-person interaction for the children together, is just creating a safe space of families who we know have been, you know, quarantining, have been laying low.
Right.
Your kids haven't been in school. My kids haven't been in school. So
definitely have found that community.
We found our community where we feel safe because we definitely don't take COVID lightly. So there's a certain community where we say, okay, y'all have been at home. We've been at home for the most part. We can then get our children together and then create small playgroup environments where the kids can get together and play safely.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that's very necessary. Jackson says he misses the interaction that he used to have with his classmates, and I get it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've not been through this before, so we don't know what the long-term situation is going to be. Everything is so up in the air, and so, you know, so it is important to make sure that you're giving them similar activities or similar things that they were doing beforehand, but in a safe space, in a safe, controlled space.
Sure.
I will say this too. I'm going to look at the camera directly when I say this. Right? For all the parents who are now advocating for their kids.
Advocating with an R.
Advocating, right? You said something that I would challenge. You said that we know our kids best. I challenge that because these kids spend 6 to 8 hours with these teachers every day. And I hear a lot of my friends and a lot of people saying on social media, all that stuff I was saying about my son when he was acting crazy and I was telling the teacher that I know my child. I do not know this person because I've been in the house with them for 4 months now.
So it's like, who am I stuck at home with?
Right.
Because this is not the child I was advocating for before.
And they're behaving the way the teacher said they were behaving in class.
Right.
And of course, your children act completely different around you than they act around their classmates and their teachers. So I would say to parents, give grace to educators when we're going through this as well, because educators are also learning how to maneuver through COVID. So even though you want to advocate as much as possible, give grace and allow it to work itself out a little bit before you jump the gun.
That's true, absolutely. Because I'm definitely a gun jumper. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you are. I will be the one to be like, no. I know that my son is not capable of this.
And I'll be like, yeah, you know.
These kids just surprise us every day. But, yeah. You know, when I did say that, you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what
that,
you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I like that you like to play devil's advocate. But it's just like we have that maternal instinct to know when something is wrong or not. So
absolutely.
Go with your gut, I would say, no?
And I think as parents now, especially when you're watching your children in these home settings, realizing and learning and understanding that if you're seeing things that are out of the norm for you, if you think this is something that's different, if they're, you know, behaving, you know, where they can't focus, they can't pay attention, they're super, super, you know, all over the place, and you never knew this about your child before because you weren't in this position with them.
Right.
That is what I think is important, to take that and realize, okay,
yes.
Maybe, you know, this isn't behavior. I don't need to yell at him or
get
at, you know, maybe there is something else happening here. And just to keep that in mind, and not to be so quick to jump and be like, oh, my kid is, you know.
And she took my moment of truth. That we do a moment of truth at the end. But that was perfect,
that
though.
That was like that's a nice segue to moment of truth.
So that was my exactly.
It's pretty much like what we've taken away from this show. Because we love for people to have takeaways. Like, what can we gather from the conversation? So usually we sum up the end of the show with a moment of truth. So. We might as well segue in it since, you know, you threw him the assist. DeVal, go dunk that shit now. Go dunk that shit.
No, I mean, my moment of truth, even last night I created a post before you came here and that said that just because your child won't sit still doesn't mean they have a behavioral issue.
Mm.
We need to investigate what other options we have before we just throw medication and labels at them. Go see someone and see if there's something else going on.
Right.
You know, and that was it. Like, he may still have a behavioral issue,
right.
But he or she may not.
Yeah.
So before we just run there, let's try to exhaust all options. And this, to me, is a viable option because I've seen sensory issues with kids for over the past decade solve a lot of problems on kids who were both medicated and unmedicated. So
dope.
And I'm an advocate for that.
Also, just to say this, if you do see these sensory issues or sensory concerns and they're not impeding your child's daily life, your child is completely learning and going to school fine and, you know, it's minor, you know, it's okay. It's not something to say, oh my God, my child is, you know, itching because they have a sweater on.
Right.
This is something I need to be concerned with. I know I'm super, you know, aware and hyper aware
of
anything that happens.
There's nothing worse than sequins under the armpit.
Yeah.
Have you ever worn a dress at like a closet top?
Yeah, the sequins under
the armpit can be all itchy and it gives you a whole rash
situation. But just know that as long as it's not impacting daily life, as long as it's not impacting their daily life, they can still function, they're okay, you know, then, you know, it's fine.
Don't all y'all flood Rima's page now. And be like, my child can't sit still. I put him in wool.
It has to be something that's affecting the child from actively.
Well, if you're going to flood Rima's page.
Yeah, tell us where we can find you.
Flood her page for this amazing book here. First of all, I love that the cover is super attractive and colorful. Yeah. Diverse characters. Okay.
Absolutely.
I feel like many children can look and see someone who potentially looks like a little bit like them. You know what I mean? Boy or girl.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. And I love that this is to your son.
We dedicated our book to our three boys too.
Absolutely. So tell everybody. I didn't even do my moment of truth. I just thought about it because I just remembered. Well, it's real quick. We're in a temporary situation. Okay, I'm putting it out there. This is in the interim. As much as we need grace, we need to give our children grace. Give them a space to feel as if they can be themselves. And in being themselves, I think that really brings us down to the core of then assessing what potentially may be a deficit or a behavioral issue or a sensory issue or whatever the case may be. But just really trying to clock in as a parent and see, okay, what exactly may be triggering this? Is this just something temporary, like the time that we're in because of the situation that we're in where children are at home? Is it something that will likely go back to normal once we have our normal back? So just give our children grace as much as we would expect that as adults, because I feel like sometimes as parents or as adults, we tend to be like, well, sit still, do that. But, you know, we're giving our kids orders all the time, where if we just kind of take a step back and just say, you know what, honey, I understand that this is like a really, you know, strange situation that we're in. I would love for you to be in school with your friends. I would love for you to have this particular, you know, playroom or classroom setting. Just letting them be and then moving from there.
Because it is a huge change for them. And realizing as much as it's affecting you, it's really, really them that is.
Yes.
Man, I have my days where I'm just trying to keep it together. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, Rima. So, Dr. Rima Naeem, tell everyone where they can find you, where they can find your book.
This is the first book in a series, and it's called The Adventures of Senso Kids. And it's basically the Senso Kids, who are four sensory characters that represent the sensory systems we work with. Mm-hmm. And they're like mini OTs. So we basically educate parents on the senses, and then we have a story. This one is focused on the tactile sense of a child who's having a hard time adequately processing tactile information, and how she calls on the Senso Kids. They magically appear, and they pretty much do activities we would do in the clinic, but home-based activities.
Oh, that's nice.
This is Dr. Rima. Doesn't she look just like her? So they call on Dr. Rima on the Senso Kids.
She's pretty much the narrator, and she starts off basically explaining what the senses are. Then we go into introducing the Senso Kids, so you know who the Senso Kids are, and then we go into the story.
This is very in-depth. I love it.
And at the end, there's a parent-teacher education page, which explains in a little more complicated language what the character in the story was dealing with and how the Senso Kids helped her and why those activities were helpful for her.
The first is
the touch sense, and then we're going to come out with more on the vestibular and the probe and the other senses to give a little bit more education.
The senses
that
I found out about today.
Yeah. Okay.
I was today years old, Joe.
Well, where can they find you on social media, Dr. Rima?
At OT Studios LA.
Fabulous. Yep. So you got all the tea right there. Sounds good. All right, now. And be sure to find us on social media, y'all. Deadass the Podcast on Instagram.
Yes.
And Kadeen IM.
And I am DeVal. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Dr. Rima, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
All right, we'll see you. I'll be there pushing weights tomorrow morning.
Yes, I know. Because what sense is that again?
Proprioception.
Proprioception. See, I'm going to start using that in my everyday language.
Push the weight, baby. Push the weight.
There you go.
Deadass. Deadass is a production of iHeartMedia Podcast Network and is produced by Denora Pena and Tribble. Follow the podcast on social media at Deadass the Podcast and never miss a thing.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule.
It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.